Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
In this episode, the 29th of the Football History Rewind series, we examine the rules changes and the season of 1911. This was the final season of old-time football before bigger changes were yet to come. We have the story on 1911 and more coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And in this edition of the Football History Rewind series, we are all the way up to part number 29, going through football history year by year. And we're going to cover the year of 1911, but we're going to touch a little bit about the end of 1910. And the History of Football year-by-year series in the last few editions has journeyed through one of the most radical rules revision periods in the history of the game, 1910. The game of 1910 was much different because of the rules changes than it was a few years earlier. Remember, the adoption of the forward pass rules, though very rudimentary and restrictive in 1906, well, they carried on through and progressed all the way up through the following years. Now, from our 20th century perspective, the rules were more closely resemble what we are familiar with in the game of football in 1910, whereas the rules of 1900 would lead one to believe it was a totally different sport altogether. Truth be told, it was a totally different game. There's more changes to come in future editions of the Football History Rewind, as you will soon see. Now, items such as the forward pass, seven men on the line of scrimmage before the snap, and tackling rules took the game from the brutal battering ram of humanity thrust into a wall of flesh to a strategic game where individuals could make a difference, but the concept of working as a team was still prevalent. The coming years after the year of great revision would have coaches and players exploring new rules and concepts that would open a door for new strategies and philosophies on the gridiron. The rules makers would make their tweaks to the new rules as well as they experimented to make the game safer for participants while at the same time trying to make the playing field level for both sides of the ball and keeping fans interested in the spectacle of the sport. Now, there were some great new strategies that came out. In the 1910 rules revisions, there must have been somewhat of a shock to the coaches that first year, for there was only one truly new concept introduced that season. The University of Minnesota and their coach, H.L. Williams, who was a former Yale player, was one of the only ones brave enough to tread out into the unknown waters of change. All other teams stayed with what they knew and had performed before, but many had to adapt to these old standards to conform to the legality of the new rules. Well, Minnesota's Williams tried a whole new concept, where he would not show the look of his formation until just before the snap. Under the strategy, Minnesota's offense would gather around the line of scrimmage, but not be in any certain positions or formations. Then, just before the snap, the players would leap into the proper positions, creating a legal formation, and snap the ball. Now, defenses never knew what they were going to get coming at them until the ball was snapped. The defenders never had a chance to shift to match the offensive formations due to masking of the offensive formation. And this new concept was fondly called the Minnesota Shift. Now, I guess the best way that we could relate to this would maybe be like the no-huddle offenses, but at least you know the personnel groups in today's game with the modern strategy and everything like that. So you got an idea what's going to happen. But maybe even a better description of modern day football is that maybe the amoeba defenses, where the defensive lines won't show their fronts to the offense and just scatter around and then finally put a hand on the ground or stand in position right before the snap. Now, some of the results of the change. Well, what was really important to these inside and outside of football's inner ring was what they did was the safety of the players increase due to the rule changes, or was it just the same bloody game that it was prior? Well, the season of 1910 statistics proved that the injuries of the game of football were drastically reduced and the new rules were the factor that caused the decrease. The public outcry against the game's brutality had, for now, been silenced and pretty much quieted down. And at the same time, the critics inside football who do not want change because they felt the game would become dull and uninteresting to spectators were silenced as well, because the games were very interesting and entertaining to the masses. The rules makers could not have hoped for a better results as strategy and it was becoming of age and people were starting to understand the game. And their innovations had probably saved the game of football. Well, in 1911, a little bit of the tweaking begins. The men that met the made the rules did not sit on their hands, though, in the next year. On the contrary, they kept at the drawing board to revise rules further to enhance the game to new levels. The biggest change to the rules in 1911 had to do with the forward pass aspect of the sport. The forward pass was still only a few years old at this point in history, and it was not used very much due to the risk versus rewards factor. The risk was that a pass that was not caught was treated the same as a fumble or almost always was a turnover. Coaches were afraid to use the pass in their game plans as a regular play because of the risk of losing possession of the ball. There's only, like they say, there's only two things that can happen in a forward pass, and only one of them's good. The forward pass held the status of what today we would call a gadget play. It was used mainly by offenses as a surprise tactic or one of desperation when you had a lot of yardage to go to get that line to gain. Well, the rules makers decided to make a change on this characteristic of the forward pass because they most wanted to see it become a standard weapon in the offense's arsenal and level that playing field out a little bit, because they had taken away the offense's greatest weapon, the mass momentum and interlock blocking, just a few years earlier. They had to give the offense something back to be a little bit potent to make the game more interesting. Well, the fumble aspect of the drop passes also provided roughness, which the Rules Committee wanted to remove from the game. In the spring meetings of 1911, the Rules Committee changed the rules of a dropped or incompleted forward pass that hit the ground to be a dead ball. Thus, the incomplete pass was born to what we know it is today. Now, during the 1911 season, it was the last of an era of rules that were the major reforms. One of the major reforms of 1912's rules body came into effect, and we'll talk about that next episode. But with that, there was a big group of teams that went undefeated. The Navy team finished with a great record of 6 wins, 0 losses, and 3 ties. A great record indeed, as two of the midshipmen ties, two of those three, were scoreless games with other top unbeaten teams. One was Penn State, who sported an 8-0-1 record, and Princeton, who recorded an 8-0-2 mark on their ledger themselves. The other teams that finished the season unbeaten were Florida at 5-0-1 and the University of Minnesota at 6-0-1. Now, later on, 1936, the Helms Athletic Foundation, which was established in that year, 1936, so decades after the 1911 season, declared retroactively that the University of Princeton had been the best team in 1911, and at this, the Tigers are recognized as the national champions of that 1911 season. On the professional circuit, it was the team of the Shelby Blues once again that captured the Ohio State title in football by knocking off the Akron Indians twice, but their title game was a season-ending victory against the up-and-coming Canton Professionals. Yeah, you got it. They would later become known as the Canton Bulldogs. Now, you can learn more about the Blues in a post and podcast we did a few months back titled The Early Pro Football Team's Shelby Blues. Now, the forward passing rules still had some ways to go though more progress would be made in 1912 to that respect in the rules revisions. So please look back for our next edition of this history football history rewind as we examine 1912 season and the rules revisions that made it into the game that we love. And it's going to be a multi-part series, I'm sure, on 1912, because that is a big year, and we're looking forward to do that. So thank you once again for joining us for some more great football history on a day-to-day basis, and we look forward to you joining us tomorrow. And until tomorrow, have a great gridiron day.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.